Hi, I'm Kevin Hardy, former All-Pro linebacker for the Jacksonville Jaguars, along with future All-Pro linebacker Miles Jack, and P&G, Sweet Stakes, you make the pick winner, Michael Garcia.
With the 103rd pick of the 2016 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Sheldon Day, defensive tackle, Notre Dame.
One of the best defensive linemen in the country, senior from Indianapolis, two-time captain at Notre Dame. There have been only 21 players in the history of... Swoops feeling the pressure, steps up and down he goes. That was Isaac Rochelle and Sheldon Day right in his grill.
Sheldon Day just throws his man to the side and gets to the quarterback.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Ryan O'Halloran.
Mike Dempsey on vacation. I don't know where he is, somewhere in the Midwest at this point in time, but off with
Southwest.
The family. Southwest, excuse me. I think he's Grand Canyoning today. I think was going to be the plan with the thing, but he won't be back till the 30th, so for the next week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever you want to call it, you got me today, you got me and Ryan O'Halloran, and it's interesting listening to the intro there today. You know, the fan feedback question of the day today is, what is your biggest question about the Jaguars heading into the rest of the offseason? So, your biggest question right now about this team, it's probably not going to change between now and the time that they open up training camp, but with the offseason basically wrapping up for this team, what is your biggest question heading into the rest of the offseason for this Jaguars team? And I hear that open with a guy like Sheldon Day, Ryan, and it was really eye-opening to me how often I heard that guy's name when you asked about who's standing out, who's kind of catching your eye, whether you're asking coaches, whether you're asking teammates, whoever you were asking, that's a guy whose name you heard a ton. And it's almost vaulted him. I haven't officially put together this list in my head, but I feel like by the time I get to training camp, Sheldon Day may be on the list of the five guys that I'm most looking forward to finally seeing in pads and seeing what it actually looks like for this guy, because he was a really, really quick kind of inside pass rusher at Notre Dame. That's what he was really good at. And at an OTA and a mini camp where there are no pads, those kind of guys are going to excel. When guys can really get their hands on you, how much can you continue to do that?
Yeah, and I asked Gus this yesterday, how can you tell for a defensive tackle? And he's like, well, you know, with no pads, what you look for is footwork and technique. And, you know, you go, when you started the offseason, okay, he's definitely going to make the team. Is he going to be active on game day? Well, I have him as part of the two platoon, so they're going to have eight linemen up on Sundays. You know, it's concentrated on the three technique has helped him, he said to me, because he's just learning one thing. So he's one of the guys that you look forward to seeing. You look forward to seeing all the linemen, because right now they're just playing patty cake, basically. So he emerged. Obviously, Gibson was a flavor of the month, legitimately so.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Marquise Lee. And for the first time in Lee's career, not only did he stay healthy, he took advantage of the opportunity. As we're talking about with Hick, is Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns were held back, and that allowed Marquise to play different spots with the first, second, and probably third team. He took advantage, which he hadn't been able to do in the past.
Yeah, I want to talk about Marquise Lee, because he is a name that you heard a lot with everyone who had the opportunity to go out to OTAs, and it feels like it's going to be a different kind of season for him, and I'll get into what I mean by that here in a couple minutes as we do wrap up the Jaguars offseason and what they got done on the field. I think, obviously, this week, for a lot of the fans, not only with the opportunity for them to go out and see this team for the first time, but from a team perspective, their first opportunity to get Miles Jack on the field and really get him moving around a little bit. And it struck me, watching this team through the mini camp, had the opportunity, the media did after Tuesday's practice, to talk to Miles Jack. He came and sat down with Mike and I after practice on Wednesday over live on the station for a couple minutes. It struck me again how much this team is going to be relying on young guys that right now they're just trying to get up to speed with what they're very basically going to be asking them to do. And I'm curious to see how long it takes them to put that together on the defensive side of the ball, where they have a real cohesive plan for how they want to use all these guys.
Yeah, it's probably a bad cliche, but Miles Jack was just trying to stay afloat this week.
Yeah.
And which is to be expected. And, you know, they want him, you know, moving fast when the training camp starts. But you're right, is they've had to redraft some positions. They've had to sign free agents for other mistakes. So it's not like they're on the hamster wheel completely, but they have been, they probably have stayed younger than they may have envisioned if some of their other picks had worked out. You know, but on the other hand, what they have done is their philosophy is when they do spend money on a free agent, it's after his rookie deal. You saw it with House last year, this year with Malik Jackson, Amakimura, and also
Gibson.
So they've stayed true to that. They've upped their spending. What they hope now is they're not signing free agents just for 2 years. They're signing them for 4 and 5.
Yeah.
And that's how you gain stability. Elsewhere on the roster, I thought it was very interesting that they signed Linkenbach and the other lineman, Patrick, what's called Pat O, and who have started games. So we're not totally relying on young guys in case of injuries.
Yeah, is it Omame?
Omame? Let's go with Omame.
I think it's Omame, maybe, is that guy's name. Again, the fan feedback question of the day today, what is your biggest question about the Jaguars heading into the rest of the offseason? You just mentioned a couple offensive linemen there. Wouldn't be surprised if that's a very, very popular answer to that question for this Jaguars team. We'll get to some of your answers later on in the program. Ryan and I will obviously discuss that. I want to start today, though, here in a moment, talking about Marquise Lee. And not only how good in OTAs and an offseason he's had for this football team, but what that could potentially mean for this Jaguars team that saw two young receivers truly emerge into this offense last year as we get things started here on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today. Ryan O'Halloran from the Times Union and Jacksonville.com joining me here. I'm Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey on vacation. We'll get it rolling here on a Friday next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field.
The Blake Bortles Foundation, we'd like to start off by giving to the One Orlando Fund $10,000, and you know, we know that, that's not near a sufficient amount of money. There's going to need to be a lot more in order to help these people out, but this is something that, we want to do and kind of lend our support, you know, as close as it is to me and my family and everybody I know that, is still in Orlando. We'd like to do that.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That the voice of your quarterback, Blake Bortles. If you want to donate to the city of Orlando, you can. Jaguars.com/Jacks for Orlando. That site will be set up between now and I think they're closing donations next Friday on June 24th. But between now and then, you can donate anytime at Jaguars.com/Jacks for Orlando. Fat Tony here with you, Ryan O'Halloran alongside. And we were talking a moment ago about Marquise Lee. And he's a guy who, through the OTAs, everyone that I talked to that went out there to OTAs practice, if there were two guys that stood out for everybody, it was Dante Fowler Jr. Coming back from that knee injury and just how comfortable he looked on the football field, and Marquise Lee and how sharp he looked at the wide receiver position for this Jaguars team. And I happen to agree with you. I think they are going to take it as easy as they need to with guys like Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, because there's no reason to push them if anything's going on physically with those guys. You know what you got with Hurns and Robinson, obviously with the extension to Hurns. I'm curious to see what the plan is going to be with a guy like Marquise Lee, because we've said it I don't know how many times. He does something that nobody else on the roster can do from a wide receiver perspective. He is that quick twitch guy, so I think they want to have a role for him in the offense. I think missing time through OTAs and mini camps and training camps has prevented this team from being able to really install him in this offense. And instead, he's been a guy that we have these four plays that we want Marquise to run. I'm curious to see if that changes with him being healthy through an OTAs.
I think that four will become like 8 or 9, and they're gonna challenge him. As Greg Olson said yesterday, is they've played him at a couple of different spots, and that's what he's gonna have to do. He's gonna have to be a utility receiver because they're not going to play Hurns, Robinson, and Green 100% of the snaps. They like Brian Walters on third down as the fourth receiver. If it's a third medium, probably not Marquise's wheelhouse right now since he's a downfield guy. But yeah, you saw him do some deep crossing routes. Obviously, the goal route straight down the field is they have to diversify his route tree so when he comes into the game, they just don't think he's going to run straight down the field.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, last year they used him on a jet sweep a couple of times. I don't like that play for him because guys like him do take big hits. I don't like him on a bubble screen. So if they can do some things in terms of out on the perimeter and then also down the middle of the field, that's a start for him. But this training camp is huge because if I'm Greg Olsen, in my eyes, he's shown me nothing yet.
Right.
And that's what he's going to have to do in August.
Greg Olsen speaking when minicamp basically got cut short yesterday, just a players meeting essentially for the guys yesterday. But Greg Olsen spoke to the media after minicamp, quote-unquote, practice yesterday with the Jacksonville Jaguars and talked specifically about Marquise Lee.
Well, one, they can stay healthy. And I wasn't here as rookie season, but I know, again, compared to last year, really excited about him. Was healthy throughout OTAs and training and the mini camp here. He's in a great place mentally. We moved him around this spring, really, by Allen Robinson having to take some days off. We were able to put Marquise at the X position, and he did some good things there. So he's got a much better, not only health-wise, he's feeling better, but he's got a better understanding overall of the offense, and he's able to play in multiple positions, which is something we had met with all three, you know, the Hearns and Robinson and Marquise. You've got to know all three positions, and I think all three of them have jumped into that, and kind of excited about that, being able to move those three guys around.
When Marquise makes progress, is because he's a doer. He learns by doing. Some guys pick it up through the book. Every guy's different. Marquise needs to be out there taking reps so he can build his own confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's, you know, I don't think he was their best receiver by far. I think Allen Hearns was still their best receiver in OTAs. Nobody could cover 88, just like nobody could cover Julius Thomas as a tight end. So this was a positive month for Lee. He's got, like Gus's term, keep stacking him up. He's got to start all over in early August and prove that he can be a part of this offense.
Yeah, and I think it's telling. You know, when we had Gus Bradley in studio with Mike and I a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned, you know, we asked, like, guys that are standing out, he's like, well, Marquise Lee's been healthy, right? And it had just been a couple days.
It's almost the punchline.
Yeah, it's just a couple days at that point, but I don't feel like even the Jaguars treated him that way. You know, through the first couple of years, I think the emergence of Hearns and the emergence of Robinson puts the team in a position where they can be whatever they were doing behind the scenes. It feels like they're more blunt. They're more honest about where Marquise is, where Marquise has been, because they have guys like they don't need Marquise to be great. If Marquise turns out to be the guy they drafted at the high end of the second round, all the better. Because they've already found those number one and two guys for this offense at the wide receiver position. The pressure's kind of off them almost with whatever Marquise Lee's going to be.
Yeah, because A-Rob's going to get his deal. Hearns has his deal. There's not going to be room for Marquise Lee after next year, I wouldn't think. So, you know, he's looking at getting his second contract somewhere. But you look at his longest catch as a rookie, 37 yards. His longest catch last year, 30 yards. He's supposed to be a guy that is supposed to really stretch the field. So, a fascinating subplot. I know the fans want him to, you know, are eager to see what he can do. And I think the coaches are too, because it's everything with him this camp was a caveat. Well, but if, you know, that kind of stuff. So he's definitely a guy to watch.
I talked to John Osier about Marquise earlier this week. And to me, watching him, especially last year, as a rookie, you know, whatever, you know, you miss some training camp. They have specific things they're going to ask you to do. Everything looked like it was going 100 miles an hour for Marquise Lee still. And then going into his second year, when he finally got back on the field for this football team, nothing looked like it had slowed down at all for Marquise. And it almost felt like he was running faster than everything was just too fast with Marquise. And he never relaxed, never let the game come to him at all. It was almost like he was watching these other guys excel. And he's like, well, if I'm going to get my opportunity, then when they call a play for me, I need a home run on every single play that I touch the ball. And what wound up happening was everything looked like it was too quick, too fast, and he got outside of himself. I'm curious to see if just being around, like you said, getting reps helps him relax and that athleticism shows up where his longest catch this year isn't 30 yards. He's making some guys miss using that athleticism instead of getting out of his own way.
Yeah, I mean, he finished 2014 strong. He had 24 catches in the last six games, so four catches a game. All that happened when Allen Robinson got hurt. You know, Mike, he started slow because of the injury. Then last year, it's the knee in the offseason. Then it's the hamstring. So he had to start all over with a new offense, but then he had to start all over again because of the injury, so he never got on track. And then you saw Hurns and Allen Robinson emerge. You know Thomas is going to be involved. So, you know, right now, when this offense is operating at peak efficiency, there's not going to be a lot of chances for him. He has to not get frustrated with that, keep his eye on the chances he's going to, and make some plays.
We know A-Rob Hearn's going to be 1-2. Beyond that, whatever order you want to put him in, whether it's Lee or Green, but Lee, Green, Walters, do they keep more than five, do you think, when everything is said? I know your 53 is coming out on Sunday.
It is five. It'll be five.
Yeah.
The track record is they've kept five. Receiver is the big wild card in terms of how much they keep, because does somebody have a calf injury? Does somebody have a hamstring? That kind of thing. That opens it up to six. I'm going to put Brian Walters on the roster because, as Alan Hearns told me the other day, he's our Mr. Reliable. Plus, he's a backup punt returner. He's mm-hmm. a really trusted punt returner in case Rashad is too busy on offense or whatever. So I think there's a place for that beat for a veteran guy. But I have him at five right now, and it would be those five.
Who would be six right now?
Probably Ben. I mean, you're like, Tony Washington was here last year, but he was hurt this offseason.
Yeah.
The other guys, just there's not a lot of track record to say, okay, would they do enough to earn a roster spot? I'm sure they think that those guys could clear waivers if they really wanted to develop them.
I know last year, like you said, Washington's been hurt. That was a guy that it seemed like he made a handful of plays at every practice mm-hmm. For a while there for the Jaguars, and he would make plays in the preseason games as well, and it wound up earning him a spot, especially with all the manipulation they had to do with Rashad Green being hurt and all these different things that were going on here in Jacksonville. But I tend to agree with you. I think it's hard to see them keeping more than five unless there is an injury in camp where they want to keep one of those guys and they have to finagle it a little bit. Outside of, obviously, they're not going to ask Hearns, they're not going to ask Robinson to play any special teams. I don't know how much they want to expose Marquise Lee, given his injury history on special teams. You know what Walters and Green gives you. It seems like most teams are getting more in the special teams out of that group of guys than the Jaguars look like they would be in this roster.
Yeah, I mean, so that requires some manipulation, and how they overcome that is they keep a tailback instead of a fullback, so that guy can be a four-core. They may keep an extra tight end, and then they have linebackers who can do it. So, you know, they manipulate the roster to overcome that. But when they signed Allen Hurns, they probably thought he'll be a reserve receiver and a gunner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he's a 1,000-yard receiver, and you're not going to put him out there. So it's a nice problem to have, but they always find a way to get four or five guys who can be four core special teamers.
The fan feedback spotlight today, we're asking you simply, what is your biggest question going into the Jaguars offseason? Minicamp is done, so they won't be back on the field until training camp gets started. So for you, the fan, what is the biggest question you have about this Jaguars team, this Jaguars roster heading into the rest of the offseason? You can respond on Twitter at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Tyler. We'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on. Hayes Carline, your colleague there with the pamphlet, going to be joining us a little bit later on.
So, fish rapid.
About 40 minutes away or so at 11:15. We're hopeful to catch up with Hayes for a few minutes, talk about his thoughts on minicamp. Going to let you hear the thoughts of Gus Bradley, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, out of minicamp yesterday as well. Maybe some of the things he's learned about his football team over the course of the last month or so through OTAs and the mandatory minicamp as we get things rolling here on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's an adventure.
We get ready.
Intelligent sports talk with an attitude.
What? Are you sure?
1010XL.
This is the quarterback here, Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yes, you are. Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you on a Friday.
That's Toto?
It is. It is. You know, I love our listeners, and I love the fact that they react. We have the different ways that you can react, whether it be on Twitter or on the phone lines, or especially the text line driven by Duval Ford. As a few moments ago, we were discussing Marquise Lee, and from the 552, we got this, dude lost his mind. I think he's talking about you, Ryan. And as far as dude lost his mind. Caldwell won't give his 39th pick in the draft a second contract. Really? It took Jimmy to be 3 years what he... It took Jimmy be 3 years to be what he was. Not well, great English there, but I get the point.
Well, I'll respond this way. Is in 2017, you could potentially have, let's say, $17 million devoted to your top two receivers if A-Rob gets his extension. You know, if Marquise Lee's back, it's because he's on a backup-type contract.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 1.5 or 2 a year, something like that, because you can't pay everybody the same. So that's my rationale on that.
I think it's
Plus, they love Rashad Green.
Yeah, I think it's pretty close to exactly where they stand right now. Mm-hmm. Now, could things change depending on how the next 2 years play out with Marquise Lee? Maybe. But with what we've seen to this point, there's no reason for this team to be racing to re-sign Marquise Lee after his contract is up, after his fourth season in the NFL. If he starts to achieve, like you said, you only have so much money and you have a lot of guys. I mean, this is a very young roster. And they re-sign Allen Hurns, but like you said, they still got to do Robinson. They're going to have to do Bortles at some point. And those aren't the only guys on this team that they're going to have to be looking at. Down the line, we're going to have to pay a lot of very young guys that we feel like are the core of this football team now.
Yeah, best case is Linder's in that, AJ Cann's in that. You know, maybe Cyprian gets a second contract. Maybe Aaron Colvin gets a second contract.
Telvin certainly feels like he's heading that direction.
He certainly feels like he's heading that direction.
You question Telvin, man.
So, there's. I mean, they have a plan, you know, in terms of who gets what. But that's why, you know, if you're Marquise Lee, you want to prove that the team that drafted you, you're worth it. But also, you're on display for all 31 teams.
Yeah,
the other teams.
I would love the Jaguars to have to make that decision, mm-hmm. right?
That'd be a good option,
right?
Yeah.
You'd love to have 2 years of Marquise Lee looking like the 39th pick in the draft, where you have to go, what are we going to do with this guy? Like, I would love for the Jaguars to have to be put in that position with Marquise Lee, because that means they got two really productive years out of Marquise Lee,
mm-hmm.
Here in 2016 and 17, and that would mean that they had three pretty darn good receivers for the next couple of years too, because I don't feel a slowdown coming for Hurns or Robinson, at least based on what we've seen from those two guys the first couple of years. Head coach Gus Bradley spoke to the media yesterday after minicamp practice was kind of called off. Here are his opening comments.
I appreciate everybody coming in. I know a little bit of a change of schedule. I mean, we had this planned a little bit and visiting with our coaches and players. So we really just took the opportunity to talk about the things that we've accomplished and where we're heading. This whole week we've talked to our team about 39 days. What are we going to do in these 39 days? And, you know, we've hit them up. We've had players speak. We've had coaches speak. We've had, different things come up. And really with the idea that let's have a really good plan so when we come back in 39 days from today that we're rolling. And what I appreciate is I just ask the players now to have some time alone and visit. The meeting could be from 30 seconds to 20 minutes. Who knows? But I really, really like the feel of this team. Really like how they're energized, their approach to it, and their mindset. So they'll have a chance to meet with our coaches afterwards, and our coaches are going to, we've had a vision for each player. They'll get a chance to visit with the coaches. So it's not a day that, all right, we had team meeting, surprise, no practice, and they're out of the building. We've got some things we need to accomplish, and we'll take full advantage of the time today to meet with the coaches and as a team.
A lot to get to in that. That's probably one of his best opening statements of his tenure here. 39 days. What a common theme from the players this week is, yes, they're going to take a little time off, but a lot of them are going to remain here to continue training, because the sense of urgency is going to be there from the 1st of August to start better in September. They've won one game in 3 years in the month of September. Second thing is, forgot It was such a long comment. How he likes the feel of the team. And it may be in one of our next comments. What he's learned about the team, we'll play that later. But
yeah.
I think what you saw from Gus yesterday is, hey, they put in a lot of good work, so let's keep them off the field for that last day.
It does feel like the dialogue is different. And has been throughout these OTAs, minicamp, and with the wrapping up yesterday. Look, we were asking questions to Dave Colwell and Gus Bradley through basically since the season ended about how much pressure is on these guys to win now. And they've answered those questions in a way that basically deflects the pressure. But you can feel it when you talk to the players, whether it's pressure, whatever it is to win for Coach Bradley, whatever it happens to be, there is an impetus for this football team to win now. And it doesn't feel like that's been here through the first 3 years with these guys in the building. And whether it's because they're going into the fourth year or because they finally have a roster that they feel like is talented enough to put that kind of pressure on those guys and for them to put it on themselves, the dialogue, the way these players and coaches are talking, has changed this year.
Yeah, they'll say it's because they feel they have a better team and not that how everybody's on the hot seat. But that's just human nature to think of. There has to be better results this year so people can stay around. These players know they're brought in by this regime. If they're gone, their chances of getting a better contract or fulfilling the guaranteed money part of theirs or getting more guaranteed money kicked in is gone as well. So it's sort of a joint effort. The bar publicly has been raised in just in terms of the comments and expectations. And you know, behind closed doors, I'm sure they are, as Italy just scored. And inside the walls, I'm sure there's been a lot of fist pounding as well, saying, okay, this is not good enough anymore.
Yeah, and it's reflected in the idea that there are going to be a bunch of guys that are hanging out, you know, that are still putting this work in. And I think that's also a reflection of a young team where there are guys, when you're looking around that locker room saying, well, maybe Miles needs me. You know, maybe Miles Jack needs me to stick around, do a little bit more work with him so that we can get this guy integrated, because you can feel the excitement for those guys about the young guys in that locker room too and just what it could look like on this defensive side of the ball. You kind of commented a moment ago on this cut from Gus Bradley, but he was asked what he has learned about his own team over the course of the last 8 weeks.
You know, I didn't know how long it would take for them to come together, and I like how fast I've seen them really come together. I think that we still have some work to do, but just with the addition of some of the free agents, the development of some of our players, the rookies that I've incorporated in, it's really, we talk about a race to maturity, and you're seeing that. The offensive line, we've got a lot of, we're trying to work on versatility, having guys play multiple positions, yet build that continuity, trying to learn as much about our offensive line as possible, and I think we've accomplished that.
One thing Gus did also talked about was interesting is the way he ran these practices. He'll continue to do it, is coaches off the field. For the first couple of years, even during 11-on-11, after each play, the coaches would come from behind the huddle, instruct, teach, give tips, et cetera, et cetera. During the OTAs and minicamps, defense on one sideline, offense on the other, coaches on the sidelines as well. Basically, it's telling them, figure it out yourself. This is what's going to happen during the game. And Gus thought as the practices went along, there are fewer and fewer mistakes. That's a positive, and I think they'll hit the ground running better once camp starts.
Situational football, right? And it's something where the Jaguars haven't been that strong. Even when they were pretty good on offense last year, they weren't great handling necessarily situational football. And it feels like that kind of thing where you're not on the field feeling like I need to teach them after each and every rep. Instead, you're saying, look, you guys are going to be on your own on Sunday, and you have to learn how to deal with a little bit of this adversity on your own. And maybe they just feel like these guys, because they've been in that fire now, they can look at the other guy in the huddle and say, okay, this is what I need to do to get better on this next rep, this kind of thing. But situational football is where they struggled, and it feels like it's been a focus through the OTAs.
Yeah, and the cohesion of the group, a lot of new guys on defense, but strong personalities, team personalities. Tayshawn Gibson, the day he got here, wasn't afraid to speak up. Malik Jackson, same thing. And I think that's going to be a key, because communication is such an important part of that defense, and they got to be on point right away.
A couple of specific players that Gus Bradley mentioned as well. I've been surprised a little bit at how little conversation there's been about the quarterback here in Jacksonville through this offseason and where he has been improving. And look, a lot of the additions they made were on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of the question marks they have on this roster are on the defensive side of the ball, trying to figure out third down. And everything that they did in the draft basically was to try to shore up that part of it. Questions about the offensive line, but not a whole lot of conversation for a guy who feels like he's emerging as a potential top 10 type quarterback in the league about Blake Bortles. Gus Bradley commented about his quarterback in his offseason.
I thought it was really good. I think these next 39 days, what the offseason has helped him, I think this offseason compared to last offseason has been more defined for him. But I think what he's learned is these next 39 days, he has a really set plan. The improvements he's made as far as knowledge on the offense and the control and really command of the offense is very evident to us as a coaching staff. And, you know, we talked to a lot of our players, sat down and had one-on-ones about, all right, what's your plan the next 39 days? He has a very clear plan.
He does. I mean, it's interesting how a quarterback flies under the radar, but there's so much else going on. It's almost like, okay, we'll get around to you in mid-August.
Right.
So that shows you how good he was last year in a lot of aspects and how many new guys there are.
Feels like a known commodity.
Yep.
Right? Like, and that just wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. For the first couple of years with Blake Bortles, you didn't know exactly what you were getting, and it feels like he's a bit more of a known commodity at this point. That doesn't mean there aren't things he needs to get better at, and we've talked about a bunch of those things, and it's not like this offense doesn't have a lot of room to improve going into the 2016 season, but it has struck me throughout the OTAs and minicamp how much of the conversation has not been about the quarterback, and I do feel like when you look at the better teams with the better quarterbacks in this league, if you're looking at the reports coming out of their camps, the conversation isn't about that position. Yeah. It's about trying to fill in the pieces around that guy so that he can be as successful as possible. And it feels like at least the turn in the conversation is going that way for Jacksonville. One more player Gus Bradley commented on. T.J. Yeldon is running back. Talked about his offseason thus far as well.
Good. You know what? I think T.J. for us, we take specific areas that we're looking at for improvement. One with T.J. was ability to use his hands in protection. That was his big vision and where we felt like he needed to improve on. And as we talked about it last night and watched tape on these things, you can see that he's improved in that area. So one of his big areas of improvement, we think that you know, he's done really well there.
I did some reading between the lines in my story today when I listened to that comment. To me, that means they're grooming him for a third down role every third down, and then he'll help out. But to me, that comment just reeked of Chris Ivory is their starter. T.J. Yeldon's their third down back, and he'll spell Ivory on early downs. I could be completely wrong, but what fun is it if you don't read between the lines?
It hints at that kind of thing. Yeah. At least for this football team. And I know Ivory has been as impressive as a running back can be, I guess, outside of pads. And he should be that much more impressive, as much of a physical presence as he is, when they finally put those pads on. So we'll see exactly how that's going to shake out for this team. But it's nice to have two guys that you feel like you can hand the ball to 20 times a game if you need it to, which is not a position this team has been in. And maybe if Denard even makes this roster, if he's going to keep fumbling in non-contact drills.
Awful.
With the way that he played the second half of last season, it becomes more and more of an uphill battle in my mind, at least for him to make this roster, if he's going to continue to do those kind of things. I don't care how much you like a guy,
yeah.
Right? And I know you can get teased by the athleticism of Denard Robinson a little bit, but if he can't hold on to the football, he can't be on the team.
Yeah, if you're Denard, you've seen them draft your replacement and then sign a replacement. I just don't know what things he does well enough. Does he return kickoffs better than Corey Grant? Does he run better than Corey Grant? No. Is he a more physical runner than Jonas Gray? No, but I think he'll squeak on there for one more year.
This state in football history, and it is honestly an interesting one. With something that happened on this date about 20 years ago today. We'll get into that here in just a moment, as well as the Honda driver on the NFL. You're listening to Fat Tony Ryan O'Halloran here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history got a bunch of interesting birthdays on this day, as well as one very historic note in the pop culture annals of history. here in just a moment. But first, the birthdays. Amari Cooper, who would be a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars if Ryan O'Halloran was the general manager, and that means that Allen Hurns probably wouldn't have signed a four-year, $40 million contract a few weeks ago here in Jacksonville either. But Amari Cooper celebrating a birthday, 22 years old today. Dermoni Dawson, the Hall of Famer, 51 years old today, spent his entire career with the Pittsburgh Steelers, played most of those years at center. I think he played his first year at either right or left guard, but the rest of his career at the center position, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2012. Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch, one of the best nicknames in NFL history, died in January of 2004 at the age of 80. Would have been 93 years old today, played end and halfback for the Chicago, and then the eventual Los Angeles Rams, was a part of the team when they moved out to L.A., inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame in 1968. Albert Haynesworth.
Oh, boy.
35 years old. Last played football in 2011.
Old Albert.
$53 million cash in his NFL career.
Covered Big Al for 2 years with the Redskins. And the three or four times he wanted to play is dominant of a defensive tackle as you've seen this
week.
Would
you say he was a pleasure to deal with, Ryan?
Was he a pleasure to deal with?
He wasn't. He was a child. He wasn't. I've covered worse, a lot worse.
One final birthday note here. Bobby Bell, the former Kansas City Chiefs linebacker, 76 years old today. Had my first opportunity to meet and speak with him at the Super Bowl in San Francisco last year. That was kind of cool. Part of the AFL's all-time team. Went to 9 straight Pro Bowls from 64 to 72. Also made 6 straight first-team all-pro teams. A hell of a football player. One of the great legends of the AFL, and again, had my first opportunity to meet him out in San Francisco. And of course, today, a date that goes down in really U.S. history infamy, June 17th, 1994, we all watched as O.J. Simpson drove his Ford Bronco across Los Angeles with police in pursuit. Obviously, it became a nationwide story as he got to his estate. He was eventually arrested and charged with the murders of Nicole Simpson and Ronald Goldman.
Well, I'm not black. I'm OJ.
I've been watching. I didn't watch any of the People versus OJ Simpson because
really?
I've seen all the stories and all the different things about the actual trial of OJ Simpson. So I didn't feel like it could bring me any nuance.
I thought it was hysterical.
Yeah, into that story particularly. But what I was very interested in, I have watched all of O.J. Made in America. They already put up all the episodes on demand. So I've already watched all 5 parts of O.J. Made in America, which is the series running on ESPN right now. I'm a sucker for documentaries, personally. And the very first scene of that thing got me. When they're interviewing O.J. at whatever that parole thing was, I don't even know what it was, but he's talking about coaching some team. He's like, I'm not playing. He's kind of chuckling, you know, doing the smiling O.J. bit.
He's such a loser.
Yeah, and then the lady asked him about when was the first time you were arrested. Was it when you were 46 and you watched his face fall?
Yeah.
Right? Like, just at the mention of that first threat, and he looked like a completely different person. I was like,
he was a white guy then. Yeah. Blood drained from his face.
I was like, holy cow, am I into this? Right? Like, as soon as that first scene ran. And for me, look, I'm a young guy. All right? I was born in 83. So, you know, when OJ's driving on my TV screen, I'm 11 years old. And I was aware of the trial. My parents didn't want me to sit down and watch the murder trial of OJ Simpson because there were some pretty mature things going on in that courtroom, including playing the Furman tapes and all the different stuff that was going on that they just didn't want to expose me to at that age. All I knew OJ as was the funny guy on the Naked Gun movies. Like, that was my experience with O.J. Simpson. I wasn't even a big enough football fan to consider him a football star at that point. So watching a documentary like O.J. Made in America, it put O.J. and that story into a context that I know everyone lived, that was around and was old enough to really experience that way, right? But for me, it was my first opportunity to really basically just watch that section of American history and what was going on between the relationship between the LAPD and the people of Los Angeles and O.J. Simpson. Like, to cut out that slice of America, for me, it was my first opportunity to ever even be exposed to that. And I found it just profoundly interesting, the story of O.J. Simpson and his rise and obviously the epic collapse, especially after June 17, 1994.
FX series was great, based on a book by Jeffrey Toobin that was awesome. I enjoyed that very much. The documentary part one was great, part two a little slow, part three was great. Looking forward to four and five.
Yeah, part four, you're going to... Darden. Oh, my gosh, Darden. What just a fool to ask him to put on that glove. And it's so interesting watching jurors that were a part of this thing in this documentary, like, basically reacting to it going, why is he doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, they're watching, you know, Johnny Cochran put on the glove, and they're like, we can tell it's obviously a big glove. Like, it doesn't fit Johnny Cochran, so there's no reason for Darden or anybody on the prosecuting team to ask OJ to put this on. And you're watching jurors in this documentary react the way they did, right? It's just, it's been so fascinating watching OJ Made in America, at least for me, and that is this state in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Did you guys ever catch what Stephen A. Smith said the other day about the O.J. case?
No.
Stephen A. Smith said if he was a lawyer, he said even though he's not a lawyer, he would have won the O.J. case. He would have won the case.
How?
That's Stephen A. Smith. He said, I'm not even a lawyer, but I would have won that case. With all that evidence, I would have won it.
Well, it's not like anyone in the jury pool didn't think the evidence was compelling. It was the fight of the black man against the LAPD. That's what won the case for the defense team in the O.J. Simpson trial, which is probably what makes it as fascinating as it is, even if the prosecution was completely bumbling in what they did.
It was sad that Stephen A. went there. But anyways, in the Honda Drive Around the NFL, the Carolina Panthers have awarded Ron Rivera his second, or he got the NFL's second NFL Coach of the Year award at the 17-2 record last year, and he was awarded a new three-year $19.5 million extension. Not a bad deal for the Panthers if you compare $6.5 million annually to Sean Payton with the Saints, who was recently signed to a five-year extension worth more than $8 million. The Von Miller and the Broncos contract situation is ongoing, and Miller posted a picture on Instagram yesterday with the caption, I love my teammates, coaches, and my fans, but there is no chance I play the 2016 season under the franchise tag. The Broncos have until the collective bargaining agreement's July 15th deadline to reach an agreement with Miller. Trent Richardson's Hall of Fame campaign has suffered a setback. The Ravens running back is why would he even say that, Tony? You're laughing.
That's so stupid.
There's being confident, and then there's just being over-the-top confident with Trent Richardson. Anyways, the Ravens running back is expected to undergo arthroscopic knee surgery for a pre-existing injury. His news comes 3 weeks after Richardson sat out a couple off-season practices due to a hamstring injury that John Harbaugh said basically was caused by him being out of shape. As of Thursday evening, June 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern, the NFL Network and NFL Red Zone have been dropped by Dish Network. So that's kind of a big deal with the NFL Network and Red Zone not being available. So
the perfect time of year for posturing.
Absolutely. And finally, here in the Honda Driver on the NFL, guys, the Vikings got wide receiver Laquon Treadwell a special present for his 21st birthday, 60,000 Welch's fruit snack packs packed into his car.
Oh, nice.
Tight end Kyle Rudolph and quarterback Teddy Bridgewater did that to celebrate Laquon Treadwell's 21st birthday.
Now, 60,000 is a little much, all right, but I like me some Welch's fruit snacks.
How big was the car?
Big enough to fit 60,000.
I think he had like a two-door Mercedes, so that'd be nice and packed to the brim.
I can't get over Stephen A. Smith thinking that he could win that prosecution. Like, does he understand how the law works? Like, you can't introduce the evidence of the glove without introducing Furman, which was one of the reasons they lost the case. And you can't introduce all the DNA evidence without the defense team being able to cross-examine all the bumbling fools that were mishandling all the evidence that to introduce it into the courtroom. Does he not realize you can't win the case without the glove or the DNA evidence, and you have to introduce it so that the defense has an opportunity to blow it wide open because the people who did it were absolute fools?
I like Stephen A. in short doses, but this is how bad Bayless is on that show. Is Steven is the voice of reason.
Holy cow.
So
you did not just say that. That was
He was pretty good on after the game two when the Cavs quit against the Warriors. Mm-hmm. It's the most pathetic performance I've ever seen in the NBA Finals. It was great. People want to see him bombastic, and most of the time he is. But stick to the sports.
No doubt about it. That is this state in football history, as well as the Honda Drive Around the NFL. Like I said, if you have Comcast, at least, which is what I have, and you want to watch parts 4 and 5 before they're even on TV here over the next couple days, they're on demand. So they already got them up. I think all the episodes are streaming on the Watch ESPN app already, too. So if you have Watch ESPN, there's no reason to have to wait around to watch it on TV. If you just want to get it over with, you have a few hours to kill, say, one of these afternoons. I didn't start watching it when the show premiered last weekend. I actually didn't watch any of it until Wednesday night, and I finished it last night. So I watched all 5 episodes in 2 days, basically. I was that interested in it.
Sorry, are you a binger on Netflix usually?
Yeah.
Or on demand?
Okay. Yeah, I usually am. So like, I watched like Making a Murderer, the big documentary series that came out, I guess, late last year. I watched that whole thing in a day and a half. Like, I was that into
15 episodes?
It was 10 or 11, okay. I want to say. And it was, they were all like an hour long. But I was so into that one.
Would you like to hear the Stephen A. audio of him saying he would have won the case?
Let me hear this.
Here's Stephen A. Smith along with Skip Bayless and the two hot takers on First Take.
Oh, and Molly.
The other morning.
I believe that the evidence was clear, and I've often been on the record saying, as anybody can call me what they want to call me, I have profound respect for the late Johnny Cochran, God rest his soul. But if it might be the cockiest thing that I've ever said. Christopher Darden and Marsha Clark did an absolutely horrendous job as prosecutors, because if it were me, there's no way in hell Johnny Cochran would have beaten me with that evidence that they had. I'm telling you right now, I'm not even a lawyer. There is no way that you would have put 12 jurors in front of me with that evidence, and I would have lost to even the Johnny Cochran. I'd have won that trial.
He's right. I agree with him.
They did a terrible job.
They did a terrible job.
They did.
They should have won it. It was a slam dunk. They did a terrible job from the time Marsha Clark thought if she had African-American women on that jury, that's her wheelhouse.
Yeah.
She was wrong. They hated her from the start.
Yep.
And then the glove didn't fit.
Then try it on that damn glove. What was he thinking? I have an OJ try it on. It's amazing that still, you know, we're 20 plus years after the fact with that whole thing, and it's still such a relevant talking point, especially with all the, obviously, the FX series and what's going on ESPN right now. And again, today is the date in 1994 that OJ was driving down the interstate in that white Ford Bronco, and it was on every TV in the entire country, just watching OJ with Al Cowlings in that car with him, and supposedly the gun to his head, maybe going to shoot himself. Never going to happen.
That was never going to happen.
No, that was absolutely never going to happen. Hayes Carline from the Times Union going to join us next. We'll get back into some Jaguars talk as we continue along on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'd have won that trial.
Yeah.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jacksonville Sharks, and Jacksonville University.
All right, rolling along on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today. Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you in studio, joined now on the phone lines by your colleague, Ryan.
Yes.
Hayes Carline joining us. What's going on today, Hayes?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Good, man, good. And I guess we'll start with we're asking the fan feedback question of the day today, and it's a good one to start with you. We're basically
They're always good.
Yeah, well, thank you. I know you're an avid listener to the program.
Absolutely.
And you tell me at least that Ryan doesn't hate me or Mike.
I heard that segment.
Yeah.
I think that could have been handled better.
I don't know if I believe you, but I at least appreciate you saying it.
Any segment I'm on could have been handled better.
But we'll ask you to get things started here, Hayes. Basically, the question is, coming into the offseason, what is the biggest question you have about this Jacksonville Jaguars team?
I think the offensive line is in some serious trouble.
Yeah.
You know, I think they've done a good job filling some holes on defense. And, you know, look, every team's going to have holes. It's hard even, you know, I mean, look at even the greatest teams. You know, they've got issues. So, I mean, it's not like this team can't be good despite it. But they clearly have issues on the offensive line, and if the defense doesn't gel pretty quickly, you know, they could be issues that really sink their, you know, their playoff hopes. Because I just think that there's a lot of instability along those 5 right now, and I think it's the percentages say that not everything they're hoping for is going to hit.
Well, especially with their track record of the percentage being very low.
Right.
Is how quickly does whatever their plan A is, how quickly did they move on to B and C? Switches staying on offense, but different player. One guy we talked about in the first hour for a couple minutes was Marquise Lee. I don't think he was the best receiver in camp. I think that was Allen Hurns this month. But if Marquise stays healthy and has a good preseason, what do you do with him?
I think they will probably keep him in the fold. Mm-hmm. But if someone called and dazzled me, which in this case would be like a third-round pick, I'd have to consider it.
Yeah.
And I think Marquise Lee could, if he can continue to stay healthy in camp, and he's going to play a ton in the preseason, because it'd be silly to play Robinson and Hurns very much. If he's a guy that goes out there and does make a couple splash plays, and maybe more so than that, but has a couple really quality games, there was obviously, a lot of buzz for Marquise Lee when he came out in the draft. He was, fairly high pick. It only takes one team to say, we've had an injury at the receiver position. We've got to go out. This is a guy that's pretty electric. Let's particularly if it's a contending team that's going to get, a comp pick or something like that in the third or fourth round next year. So, but my guess is they'll keep him. I mean, this is a must-win year. If something were to happen, some injuries at that position, Lee could be a guy that could be able to help them. So I don't think that they'll get to that yet. Maybe that's going to be looking more towards next year, because I don't see him getting a second contract here. But it will be interesting. I think they'll hold on to him, but I do think it's possible. If they have any tradable assets, I think Marquise Lee is at the top of the list.
I'd be really surprised if they traded Marquise Lee. But talking about it here, what is the minimum that you would accept for a guy like Marquise Lee? You mentioned a third round pick. Would you accept less than that? And I'm looking at a guy, even with as good as the wide receiver group was last year, nobody else in that group can do what Marquise Lee can do. And for a team that's on offense looking for another dimension to add to that offense, it would be hard for me to see them parting ways with a guy as athletic and quick twitch as a guy like Marquise Lee is.
Right, and that's why I don't think you're going to see it happen, because, again, they need the depth. This is a team that still doesn't have depth in a lot of positions, receivers, one in which they do. So I do think they'll hold on to him, and it'll probably be more of a discussion a year from now. But you have to look at the future, and with Allen Hurns getting paid, and we absolutely know that Allen Robinson's going to get a mega deal, you can't pay three receivers. So, it's going to be really interesting, because even if Marquise Lee really gets going, there's really the Hurns deal sort of tells me there's not room for a third receiver, to get big money here. So, it'll be interesting to see. Do they trade him and try and get some value out of him? Obviously, if he, was productive and left in free agency, then they'd get some sort of a comp pick in return, you would think. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'd hold on to him unless somebody dazzled me, which, again, I'd put it a third-round pick. I mean, I wouldn't flip him for, a fifth or a sixth right now.
One, switching over to defense, Hayes, one of the guys you talked to this week was Unique Ngakoue. Inside the building, they still call him Yannick. But besides that third-round pick.
Well, the general manager still doesn't know it's A.J. Khan. Every time I talk to him, he's like, Khan, yeah. That guy, right guard.
A.J. With Ngakoue, I liked what I saw. How did he feel about his camp?
I think he was really happy with it. I think he felt like he showed the speed and explosiveness that they were hoping for when they selected him in the third round. But the interesting thing was the coaches' reactions about, how they feel like he can play the run. I thought it was a little surprising that they went there because, again, we haven't seen any contact. There's been no pads, anything like that. But they feel like, at least from what they've seen, that he's going to be better against the run than what they initially thought, at least on the coaching side of things. So, that'll be, really interesting to see how that plays out in training camp. But I think he's off to a good start. I mean, the biggest thing is, he didn't miss one of these things. He got all the reps, and, that should only help him.
We mentioned earlier that it's funny to me how little of the conversation this offseason has been about Blake Bortles, the quarterback, despite how important he is, obviously, for this team going forward. How has he looked through the OTAs? This is a guy who's never been a really good practice player. I still go back to that rookie minicamp when I'm standing out there watching those ducks that he's throwing and looking at everyone around me going, oh, what have they done with the number three pick potentially? But obviously when the lights come on, and it was from the very first time the lights came on and Blake was allowed to go out on the field, he took control. How has he looked in practice through the OTAs?
Yeah, and he's come 1,000% from that rookie camp. And I mean, you're absolutely right. I think we all were thinking that. But and he sort of admitted yesterday, look, I'm never going to throw the prettiest ball. That's just not my game. But I think a lot of what we saw, you know, his first year was just arm fatigue from going through the draft process. You know, to me, he's looked like a thoroughbred Kentucky Derby champion that, you know, it's just he's waiting for the race. Yeah. You know, it's like he's sort of biding his time. I did think as the offseason program progressed, he started making some pretty special throws. But I think I get the sense that he has a confidence that he can play at a high level in this league. And, you know, I think he's sort of pacing himself to get ready for September 11th against the Packers. And, I think Green Bay is going to have some difficulty stopping him.
Biggest question mark on offense, we agree, it's the line. What's your biggest question mark going into camp on defense?
I think the nickel spot's going to be really intriguing because you did a good job writing in today's section about it. It's with Colvin suspended for the first four games, you know, who do you put there? I mean, to me, it would be Jalen Ramsey, you know, for the reasons you laid out. Amukamara doesn't want to be inside. I mean, he'll do it if he's asked, but he prefers to play on the outside. And Dwayne Gross, I just don't think is going to be able to do it. There hasn't been much in Dwayne Gross's career that suggests that he can do something really effectively for any length of time. So, I think they're sort of in a tough spot there when you consider that probably 60% of their snaps are going to have a nickel on the field. So, you know, to me, is that a position where, you know, Jalen Ramsey can come in, solidify it, let House and Amukamara work the outside, and then obviously Ramsey could move outside on base downs. I think he's athletic enough to do it. I mean, that was one of the things that I, you know, thought really stood out about him is that he can sort of be a chess piece. You move all over the field, but it's just, you know, how much can he handle that soon in his rookie season?
Hayes Carline joining us from the Times Union, also Jacksonville.com. Obviously, colleagues with Ryan O'Halloran as they both covered the Jacksonville Jaguars beat for those guys down there. And Hayes, talking about the defensive side of the ball, it feels like this is a team that, with all the struggles they had on third down last year, has been trying to solve whatever that's going to look like from a personnel perspective. And I get the sense that they want to be more aggressive than they have been in the past. This looked like a team the last couple of years that is very uncomfortable when they got put in positions where they needed to bring five or six. Has that been, in your mind at least, part of the focus of this offseason is trying to make everyone on this team more comfortable with bringing those pressure packages?
I think so, and I think it starts with Todd Wash. I think he's going to bring more of that dynamic than Bob Babich ever thought about doing. There have been times in OTAs where we've seen them, you know, bring pressure, and it's been pretty impressive. I mean, within a split second, you know, where even it seems like the offensive guys are sort of looking at themselves like, did that, you know, what just happened there? So I do think the potential is there for that. And, you know, and they need it. I mean, it was a horror show last year when they tried to do it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but I mean, I think, again, getting back to just the upgrade in personnel, I think Fowler and Ngakoue are going to just be light year improvements over Chris Clemons and Andre Branch.
Yeah, and I think they're going to need to send extra guys early on to create pressure because there is going to be that natural transition for Fowler and Ngakoue to the NFL game. And
some one-on-one for those guys, too. Create, give them matchups.
Yeah, create some stuff. And I think Todd's going to do this, is create some stuff to get your young guys going. Then you can sort of maybe play a little bit more coverage and rely on and Jackson and Mark's inside. But at linebacker, that's another thing that's going to be fascinating to watch. First third down against Green Bay, first sub-package down, who's out there at linebacker, do you think?
Man, that's going to be really interesting to see. I mean, I would think with Green Bay and the speed that they have at the receiver spot and Rodgers, I mean, I would think you'd lean more towards Jack and Telvin, but it's hard to say. I mean, yeah, I think Miles Jack is, you know, if he's healthy, and I don't think there's any question that he's not going to come off the field if he lives up to you know, his athletic reputation. But, that is really going to be pretty compelling to see, because obviously Posluszny is a guy that, you know, they trust probably more than anyone on the roster. And, you know, he certainly has the experience. But, you know, he has struggled at times in coverage. And, you know, Telvin just brings that sort of speed dynamic. So, you know, Telvin Smith and Miles Jack on the field at the same time, that really would have some potential from a game-changing playmaking standpoint.
All right, Hayes, appreciate you giving us a few minutes today. It's always fun to get you on, especially with Ryan. It's two of the three people I'm pretty sure Ryan likes that he's getting to talk to now.
The people you heard in Hayes' background, I do like his kids.
Okay, so we got the list up to four. Right now. So, Hayes, thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes today, and we'll catch up with you again throughout the offseason here, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, there he goes. Hayes Carlion joining us for a couple minutes to talk a little Jaguars football. We got the fan feedback spotlight coming up. What is your biggest question, Jacksonville, going into the offseason? OTAs are done. Minicamp is done. They're not going to be back on the field until we reassemble for training camp, and hopefully outside of just everyone writing about some of the questions we have about this team throughout this offseason, there are no headlines for the Jacksonville Jaguars over the course of the next 6 weeks, because offseason headlines are generally bad headlines.
And that's why these are to quote Gus, the 39 days. These are the 39 days where I root for the Jaguars to do nothing.
Yeah. You don't want to be busy during these 39.
No suspensions.
You want to have to make up stories and figure out how to plan them out. Let's spread them out over the course of the next 38 days
now.
Let's
save this.
You only got 38 days.
38.
You got 38 left, as we'll get into the fan feedback spotlight at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter. If you want to send in your responses, also on the Facebook page, JaguarsToday.com, or Jaguars Today on Facebook. We ought to just get our own website. Why don't we do that? Why is it just a Facebook page?
We have someone that has the Jaguars Today Twitter, but it is unaffiliated with the show.
Huh. I don't know why it took us 2.5 years to even think about that prospect.
Right.
We are really bad at this internet thing, but we will get to some of your internet responses.
Oh, the interweb.
Yeah, here in just a moment as we continue to roll along on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field.
The Blake Bortles Foundation, we'd like to start off by giving to the One Orlando Fund $10,000. And, you know, we know that's not near a sufficient amount of money. That there's going to need to be a lot more in order to help these people out. But this is something that we want to do and kind of lend our support, as close as it is to me and my family and everybody I know that is still in Orlando. We'd like to do that.
It's been an unbelievably difficult week for the city of Orlando. Blake Bortles, you heard speaking there about the Blake Bortles Foundation making a $10,000 donation to the people of Orlando. If you want to help out our neighbors to the south, you can. Just go to jaguars.com/jacksfororlando, and you can make your donations there. They are going to have the donations are going to be open between now and next Friday, so you have a week to get those donations in and show Orlando just that we're thinking about him, we're praying for him and all the victims down there and everyone who's having to deal with the wake of that kind of tragedy. It's impossible to even understand exactly how you even deal with a situation like that until you're stuck in the middle of it. So if you want to help him out, again, you can just go to jaguars.com/jacksfororlando. To make your donations there. We're going to get into the fan feedback spotlight here in just a moment, but given the nature of the answers we've given, I'd like to hear a comment from offensive coordinator Greg Olson first here in just a moment. As we're asking fans today, what is your biggest question about this Jaguars team heading into the offseason with OTAs done, minicamp is done, wrapping up yesterday. So all we have between now and training camp are questions about what this football team is going to be. So what is your biggest question? And, of course, the offensive line is an answer that came up a lot today. We'll get to all of your answers here in just a moment or two. But first, Greg Olson speaking after minicamp wrapped up yesterday about the progression of that offensive line.
Much like last, we have a couple of issues we've got to get solved. Obviously, the left side of the line we talk about. I think we've got a pretty good feel about the right side and the center position right now. The left side line will still have some competition there at the left guard and left tackle position. But again, it will be good competition. It'll be good to see Kelvin Beachin back, and we'll try and get a good feel for that, and we'll try to make a decision quickly. Certainly, we'd like to get the five best players playing together with Blake as soon as possible, so we'll try and make a decision on that early in training camp.
And it's going to be an interesting beginning of training camp as far as whether Kelvin Beachum's even good enough to go, how far into camp if he's not ready at the beginning. Will it be before he's ready to get on the football field? It still feels to me, Ryan, like they want Kelvin Beachum to be the left tackle for this football team. What they're going to do with that left guard spot, in my mind, is still up in the air. I can't see Luke Jokel as a left guard.
I think me, you, and Hayes are we're on our own island there.
I don't see it.
Yeah, and we're gonna stay on that vine until we die. but I finally got some clarity on Beachum yesterday from Dave Caldwell. Mm-hmm. They'd sort of been hesitant. He says not definitive, but a greater percentage that he'll be cleared for the first day of camp, which is optimistic compared to the first week of August. So that'd be July 27, 28.
Sure.
I said, well, okay, if he's cleared and on the field, any restrictions? And Caldwell said that there wouldn't be. So they want to make this decision really quick and maybe like by the second preseason game so they can have second preseason game, third preseason game with the starting five intact. And what they need to do in order to make that decision, they need to see everybody on the field.
Yeah. And look, it was when they signed Beachum, it felt like it may not be until really the third week of the preseason that they may even have Beachum available. So it would be really good news for this football team if they could have him for the beginning of training camp and he's ready to go. You know, and look, these are important questions for a football team that we're talking about the offense. And for me, the big question coming into the offseason offensively and going into these last 6 weeks of the offseason, essentially, is focused on where are they going to be able to find, how are they going to be able to find the level of consistency that the really, really, really good offenses in this league have where they dictate games. They weren't ready to do that last year. What are the steps they need to take? And part of it is they've had nothing to keep Blake Bortles upright on that offensive line. He's been hit way, way, way too much through his first 2 years in the league. And the big questions they have about that left side of the offensive line, the earlier that they can answer them with whatever answers are available to them on this roster, the better.
You know, they waited last year until Wisniewski was able to go with after shoulder surgery. They solidified it before that third game. I'm thinking they probably felt that impacted the early season performance. There wasn't a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they want to push that timetable back a week or two and feeling that if they play more together in that second and third preseason games, let's say they get 75 snaps out of those two games,
mm-hmm.
that will be enough to be ready to go in week one.
Let's hope.
They need to.
As the look, we can talk all we want for the next 6 weeks about how long will it take for this defense to really come together. Well, if they're waiting on a bunch of new faces on defense to really start gelling and come together, then that means there's going to be that kind of same level of pressure on the offense that there was for the most part last year. And this is a football team that simply can't afford to start the season the way they have for the last 3 years. So it needs to be better in the first month and a half of the season for this Jaguars team. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. What is your biggest question about the Jaguars heading into the rest of the offseason? Here's some of the answers we got on Facebook before we get to the Twitter reaction from Garrett. My question is, can they bring it together and just win some football games? Both local and national media is in love with everything about the Jags right now, but that doesn't equal success on the field. But I'm hopeful.
Well, being local media, that's me. I think we've talked about today how we're not in love with everything. The Nationals are going to, of course, jump on everybody's bandwagon. This team's still got some issues they need to get figured out.
No doubt about it. And I, like Garrett, I'm hopeful, you know, that they have the answers on this roster. I think I'm confident that they have enough pieces on defense that even if it's not early in the year, they're going to be pretty good and much improved on that side of the ball at some point in 2016.
Yeah.
The big questions, and again, it's the answer we got a lot today, are offensive line. Kevin says offensive line for sure. Can they open holes for the running back so the defense might actually bite on play action? Balance would make pass protection easier. From Scott, from Ronald, he said, can offensive line protect better than in years past? Donovan simply said, offensive line. And for me, that's the big question mark, is that's the engine that makes the consistency work for an offensive football team. And it doesn't have to be great. It just has to be okay. And I think there are questions about whether how okay they're going to be in 2016 at this point.
What was the comment about balance?
Let's see. The comment was balance would make pass protection easier as well.
I think that's a very good point, because a hallmark of a Greg Olsen offense is play action. That will even play in more in terms of taking shots downfield. Defenses didn't respect this run game last year, especially when TJ Yeldon got hurt. So if they can be a little bit more balanced and they can run it better, that will make the passing game even more effective.
Tyler, what are some of the answers we got on Twitter today?
On Twitter, Irish Jaguar says the left side of the offensive line. Paolo says whether Linder can actually snap the ball. Isaiah says the edge rushers and left tackle position. Brian says besides offensive line, true depth at free safety, if Gibson goes down, it drastically changes the capabilities of the D. JagFan15 on Twitter says, can the coaches and players put it all together? That's the question he has. Jarrell says, aside from the left guard and left tackle positions, who will back up Gibson at free safety? Black Dog Express says, the big question is also the most important question. How will the offensive line shape up? That was mainly the response, much like you got on Facebook, on Twitter as well, was the offensive line.
Yeah, and they're right. You know, just to take a couple of those, if Gibson misses a week or whatever, Peyton Thompson is their number two guy right now. They like him as a versatile player. If Linder, I mean, he snapped the ball a lot during the OTAs. You know, figured that they're in good shape there. So
I kind of I'm not all that nervous about Brandon Linder transitioning to center.
No,
it doesn't bother me. He's a talented enough guy that I'm not concerned about it. The left side of the offensive line, I have a bunch of questions, but center to right tackle, I'm fine.
Yeah, the only thing with is Linder is if you would have kept him at right guard, you would have put AJ Can at left guard, and you got two solid guards there, and then if they would have acquired a center, but they made the decision to keep AJ at right side, so that if you're a predominantly run right team, you got two guys there who learned how to work together. So agree, right side, center, right guard, right tackle, decent shape. They just have to get the left side figured out.
I know you got the way too early 53 that
way too early
will open you up for criticism, and people will make fun of you based on whatever prediction you had, and you'll get that smack back in your face on July 30th. Like, look what kind of fool Ryan is who thought this guy was going to make the roster.
I think I'm going to get that June 20th.
But we get that kind of stuff anyway. I know you got that coming out on Sunday in the paper. What else do you have coming
up? Got the 53-man projection. You know, people who listen to this show and read our coverage probably aren't going to be surprised by a lot of it. I threw one or two curveballs in there. And then also Hayes will have the NFL Insider. He's looking at defenses who, besides the Jaguars, who can make a big leap this year. And then I'll have a Jags Insider. And then next week, Unique Ngakoue feature by Hayes. And also forget to plug in Saturday's paper, our colleague Philip Heilman has a feature on Bode Calhoun. How do you pronounce his first name?
I'm not sure.
He was around the football a lot,
So
we have a feature on him. So what you'll see over the next 38 days is some features on players who are maybe under the radar but have great stories as well.
You hitting the road, taking advantage of 38 days?
I am going to. I'm going to spend a couple days in Sarasota this over the next week, be back in town, and then headed up north to see family over the 4th of July, and then we'll be back here, and before you know it, we'll be out there.
It's not going to take long for us to be out there for training camp. Thank you so much to Ryan O'Halloran for joining us in studio today, for Tyler Devitt, for Hayes Carline, who joined us as well, Gus Bradley, Greg Olsen, Blake Bortles. You heard from all of them on the program today as well, for Mike Dempsey up there. He tweeted out the picture. It is Grand Canyon Day for the Dempsey clan, so you can check that out. On I'm not sure if he tweeted it. I know it's on Facebook, though, but it might be on Twitter, too. So you can check that out there on his timeline if you want to say, hey, what's up, Dempsey? Hey, come back soon. Tony sucks. Whatever you want to say, I don't care. It's not going to hurt my feelings. It's not going to hurt my feelings as we get ready for the weekend. We'll welcome in the boys of the Midday Chalk next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm telling you right now, I'm not even a lawyer. I'd have won that trial.
You guys have a good day. Peace.